And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, A from the BEAUT, full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, better one. All right, today we have an interesting show. Jason Ditz from antiwar.com. He's going to get us all caught up on Russia and the South China Sea, Afghanistan, and the POTUS circus. Yep, got to go to the circus. All right, what we're going to be doing, I really wanted to get some up to date on the South China Sea. We have Scott Horton on in the second hour, and man, he's focused on the Middle East, and he's just the anti-war radio, and he's just like, man, yeah, the Middle East, Syria, Russia, Middle East, Afghanistan, Middle East. And I'm going, yeah, what about South China Sea? Maybe next time, you know, and I'm going, all right, next time we'll focus on the Middle East with him because he's got something to say again. But Jason's going to help us out with the South China Sea thing. I'm just like, I told you I'd get you hooked up, you know, and we find out what the heck is going on. So that's what we're going to do today. In the second hour, Scott Horton, you know, every Friday we get him on and get caught up on, you know, all that research on war and rumor of wars and, so one less thing I got to do. Well, Scott's going to help us out there. First hour, Lisa Haven is a recommendation from Dave Hodges, the Common Sense Show. Dave is going to be speaking at the Arizona Breakfast Club tomorrow. Tomorrow here, there's our breakfast club. It's open to everybody. You guys just, you know, come on into the club. And we're going to go ahead and have a good time with Dave. He's very popular and always trying to scare the living crap out of us. So we're going to see what's going on there. Well, he's suggested we talk to Lisa. Lisa is an independent Christian news analyst and one of the top contributors on BeforeIt'sNews.com. She's also author of www.lisahaven, LISAHAVEN news, lisahavennews.net, and runs her own YouTube channel, Lisa Haven, with tens of thousands of views per day. Digging deep and finding truth is what she lives for. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. Sounds good to me. Her passion is to spread truth no matter where it lies. She covers everything from martial law to FEMA camps to Bible prophecy to government documents and much more. Before launching her journalism career, she wrote many Bible studies and led women ministries for a number of years. She will also complete her ministry degree at International School of Ministry this year. Now we have a bunch of other lists of different articles and so on. And well, POTUS, the President of the United States of America, 2016, she has an opinion. Let's get the introduce ourselves and her to you, Lisa Haven. Hello, welcome to the show. She's on Skype. I'm sorry. I pushed the wrong button. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Yeah, I pushed the wrong button. All right, what we're going to do is get to know you from your introduction here. It gives us a little bit of a taste. Go ahead and tell us all about yourself, will you?
Well, I think that kind of told a lot about it, but I'm all about just getting truth out no matter what it is and, you know, getting down to the nitty gritty. And I try to, through my YouTube channel and other outlets, I try to go and, you know, find the actual documentation so people can see it for themselves, have the tangible evidence. And I've read many of, you know, Agenda 21, internment and resettlement documents. I mean, multiple things that exist out there that are quite chilling, quite frankly, but just, you know, despite everything that's going on, we know the mainstream media is full of a bunch of lies. So they can't be trusted anymore. And they prove that time and time again. And thus the rise of YouTubers like me, Dave Hodges, and many others.
Okay, thank you. You know, when you're talking, you're passionate, and you're banging on a table or something, don't do that. We get the thunk in here. So when we go ahead and ask you things about anything, is there a biblical link? Are you using that as a guidebook, as a historical reference, as, you know, tell me about how you're using your Christian faith as part of your dissection of the news.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Christianity is always been a part of my life. And biblically speaking, we know, I mean, according to the Bible, in my opinion, it's the foundation for the Christian faith. It's the foundation for my faith. Absolutely. But there's lots of things I will say, you know, that not every dot and tittle is going to be written in the Bible, but the Bible gives us a direction of what very likely the future is going to hold, what it's going to look like. So we can look to things and say, oh, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, a new world order forming, because it says in there that every tribe, tongue, and nation will serve one leader, the Antichrist. Well, if I go to today, I don't even have to know scripture to know what's going on. But I mean, it's absolutely 100% when you see the Bible coming to life, if that makes sense. So we have biblical, and knowing the Bible and having read the Bible, you can absolutely see everything come to pass. And we see that with the New World Order. I mean, we've had presidents for years, you know, even before Bush's daddy, you know, the first Bush, he said, you know, we must form a New World Order. And he says, we will. That was, you know, a direct quote, and so on and so forth. And while they claim it a conspiracy theory, like the right wing extremist document that Janet Napolitano put out a couple of years ago, she said, if you believe in the New World Order, you might be a terrorist. And here we have high up leaders talking on a daily basis.
Now,
the Bible telling us about it.
No, I remember saying something like, if you believe in the second coming, you know, there was that. You're talking about Napolitano. God, the same thing. It Reno in the Clinton administration, there was during the Waco thing, they used a Christian faith as justification for you're too crazy to live and we got to come get you. And then Janet Napolitano was U.S. assistant attorney under Reno in the late 90s here in Arizona and prosecuted, like, you know, all the malicious stuff, and they're going after guns and everything. She becomes attorney general, governor, head of the Gestapo, the Homeland Security. So I'm just going, you know, why Arizona, man? It's going, and you're from here in Arizona, Phoenix area, aren't you?
Yeah. And that's why she's very concerning.
Well, you know, where she is now, what she's doing, some college thing in California. What's she doing now?
You know, I haven't followed her much since then.
You're better off for it. Okay. So the what we want to do is get to know you from a perspective that I think is interesting, is that when I was first becoming aware, adult, and starting reading and worrying about stuff, what was it? Hal Lindsey's book. Was it Great Late Planet Earth or something? Wasn't that his book?
Yeah. That was it.
So that had a big impact on me. It's kind of, look, this has all been predicted. You know, dang, you got this Bible thing out there, and you know what? They've been through this before. It seems more like a human nature thing that kind of keeps repeating. If you didn't have, you know, the New World Order Antichrist coming together and want to get it all under, I rule you and I'm Dr. Evil, you know, if it wasn't happening now, it happened later, or it's happened in the past, it keeps happening. Everybody wants to rule the world. And I'm going, all right, so what does the Bible say about such people? What happens to them? Well, you know, the righteous, the remnant, rise up, and with a chest full of righteous indignation and damn just justice, stuff happens. Well, that stuff is happening. Where are the Christians? Well, it's like Pastor Chuck Baldwin is like, look, man, you know, the pastors, the black robes, they're not doing their job. So we're going to have from the pulpit, it will come. Or maybe a YouTube channel from someone like Lisa Haven. We come back.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buy and purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like?
Yes, I am. Okay. So what we're going to go ahead and do when we come back, Lisa, is there anything we kind of got a good intro and where your perspective is and such? You know, is there any current news right now you want to apply it to? POTUS, war?
Yeah, we can talk about the race. I've got the presidential race. I've got a ton of stuff on that if you want.
Yep. All right. You know, it's like, we talk about it. Yesterday, we just did like 4 or 5 hours of nothing but Trump report, Trump report. You know, so we've been covering.
We can talk about some of their, you know, I mean, anything. I've got, you know, Bible prophecy. I've got FEMA stuff. I've got.
Well, we got some updates on, FEMA and rounding up and so on. If you got, you know, of course, Dave's going to try and scare crap out of us tomorrow. But,
in the United Nations, there's a lot on the UN too.
Yeah, one thing that recently, that kind of from out of left field on the United Nations is all of a sudden, just a story yesterday. Here, let me pull this up. Read it to you. I think I got it up towards. Yeah, it was United Nations doing its first space launch. They're going to have their own, Death Star. So I'm going. Okay, there's that, you know. We got that to look forward to. All right, we'll be right back.
Okay, sounds good.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, where we're going, there aren't any roads. A little bit of, space travel and so on. We're going to talk about United Nations a little bit. You know, Agenda 21. Well, I got another agenda for you. How about the United Nations will launch its first space mission in 2021? So it's a 21 thing. Agenda 21. You know, 21st century. 21 in space. You know, it's like, what was that? Was that 2001, A Space Odyssey? Well, that's 2021. The United Nations is going to be ruling you from space. The Death Star. Yeah, I'm feeling all kind of wonderful on that one. Okay, let's see. It never launched its own space mission. They're finally slated to change in 2021. The UN plans to send a spacecraft into orbit. As detailed for a small crowd International Aeronautical Congress yesterday, the goal of the 2021 UN mission is to make space accessible to all tyrants around the world so they can rule. Oh, I'm sorry. To developing member states that lack the resources to develop a standalone national space program, one of UNOOSA's UNOSA's, whatever, core responsibilities to promote cooperation and the peaceful uses of outer space. We are screwed. It's always 180 degrees from whatever the hell it is they say. You know, well, here we go. So the Agenda 21st Century of Rule Me from Space is, that on your radar screen there, Lisa, that come to your attention at all?
Oh, yeah. Anything with the UN comes to my attention. And, you know, space, I guess, is their next move because they're already attempting to take over the world, so to speak. But, you know, a lot of things that they do are very concerning to me. And they've got their tentacles pretty much.
Lisa, I apologize. I really got to ask you not to hit the table, whatever you're hitting.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, I'm sorry. So, yeah, the United Nations, you're looking at Agenda 21 we're interested in. We've been doing a lot of, and it's really just another excuse of resources of sustainable planning based on their sustainable central plan of a 5-year sustainable. And I'm going, it's just more rule. And now it's going to go to space. And Elon's like, we're going to Mars. Not if we beat you there first. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm wondering how you see this agenda being played out in the POTUS race. Is there something that they're talking about that's going to be softening the implementation of whatever they got planned for us over the next year or so? You know, what's kind of immediate? United Nations, the sustainable planning, what they're doing here in the POTUS race. Kind of wrap that all together, what we can expect, would you please?
Absolutely. I think, you know, depending on which candidate gets in, well, first, let me say this. We know that the Bible, again, predicted this United Nations sort of order. So that's more proof or evidence for the Bible for those. And that's why I think prophecy is so huge for everybody. But that said, we have two candidates here. We have Hillary and then we have Donald Trump. Hillary is a globalist candidate. We have tons of globalists backing her, supporting her. She's accepting money from the Saudis. And so if she gets into office, we're in a whole hell of a high water, so to speak, because we're in deep trouble.
Well, let's go ahead before you go. Let's define some of the words here. When you say globalist, you know, give us what you mean by that.
Which means she's in league with the New World Order. She wants to push the UN. She wants to get rid of American sovereignty. She wants to push international regulations and laws on our country and, quote, spread the wealth around, which is exactly what, quote, progressives are all about. And she has ties with communist China. She has ties with, you know, Saudis in the Middle East. And so there's this New World Order globalist Illuminati, the people who do things from behind the scenes, that satanic forces. That's what they are. And they work together to accomplish the goals of, you know, Satan.
You know, okay, when you say satanic forces, not like there's not, you know, like evil. And is it a club? Is it a religion? Is it a like a sanctioned effort of you bring in all the alphabet soup of different either agencies in and outside of the government? Is there a, you know, touchstone that they all have, or is it just kind of an opinion that they should rule me because they're elite enough to do so? Or so, I mean, you know, when you have this, I guess, you know, could it be Satan? I mean, you know, I mean, just like, is it really a manifestation of that in some way, or a philosophy? Well, kind of define what we're going up against.
Well, it is an organization, so to speak, but also a religion, one in which, you know, they may not believe that they serve Satan, so to speak, but they're definitely serving sect forces. Now, some of them, it just depends on where on the spectrum you are. Some of them are all out doing sacrifices at, you know, Bohemian Grove, and they're full-fledged in it. Now, those are the ones that are likely up higher on the totem pole than some of the ones that are lower on the totem pole. But there is, you know, an Illuminati organization. There are people at the top ruling over, and they go under many names. I mean, they've got so many names. They've changed it over the years to confuse people. But you've got Skull and Crossbones. You've got Illuminati. You've got the globalists. You know, it's just this one group of people who, with power, with influence over the years, and they are. I mean, it's not like, you know, Satan comes down and talks to the people and they're doing his bidding. Obviously, it's not like that. What it is we know that there's, you know, other dimensions, so to speak. We have a spiritual dimension. And so it's kind of like a Christian. When we pray, you know, we pray to God, ask him for our guidance. Well, they'll, you know, have their you know, either satanic forces that they'll pray and ask for help from him. Now, it's not a cliche. All of them may not do that, but a lot of them are in there, part of this organization and part of moving towards that goal. So does that make sense?
They, them, those, man, they won't leave me alone. That's how I decide if they're bad or not. I just don't. It just seems to me, as a Christian, you would look at and you read the New Testament, and it's a lot different than the Old. I've read the Bible straight through a couple of times, and I tell you what I got out of it. One, there's Old Testament and there's the New Testament. The New Testament is, peace, brother. And I tell you what, I'm not going to be your brother's keeper. You know, you, if I do it, it's voluntary. It's not with a spear to your side. I don't go to Caesar and say, hey, make him be his brother's keeper. I use witness, parable, testimony, example, teaching. It was always voluntary persuasion. When I see Christians getting involved in politics, I remember when I'm 55, born in 61, graduated high school 79. And when Reagan was running for president, and certainly Jimmy Carter had the evangelical Southern Baptist type, kind of made that a political force. And then it kind of switched over to this Republican thing. But what happened was, during that time, I remember being involved in politics was a bad thing. You were going to not use government force, laws of man, to fix it. It was a social culture thing through the power of peace. You know, the Prince of Peace. This was, you changed hearts and minds. Well, that kind of shifted. Well, then we have people like Pastor Chuck Baldwin that was in the middle of that. He saw what happened. He described to us how it went down, and that, man, you got to get back to the, the hearts and minds thing. Well, they always want to use a leash, a suitcase with a handle or something, and Christianity has a lot of people. Well, where do you think the Prince of Darkness is going to put his effort? Where we're the strongest in our faith. We'll talk about it when we come back.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Thursday, gold is $2 lower at $1,321 per ounce. Silver is down 6 cents at $19.18 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $603. With silver heading lower, this is a great time to buy on the dip. Get started today and give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Uncovering the secrets, uncovering the lies, exposing the lies. You know, that's one thing that I remember a lot that I got from reading the Bible, is how it was like, I saw the same thing again when I read Atlas Shrugged. It was clairvoyance. It's like, this is what happens to people when they do this. You shouldn't do that, just saying. This is what happens when you do. And then when this rises to power and it comes and dominates and over and you got to rise up, the remnant must come together and go do some butt whipping. Well, it gives you a lot of people a sense of peace to at least understand what's happening. But too often, I'm just sitting this one out. I'll wait for the second coming, and Christ will see me, just with my face and palms up, and take me and beam me up, Scotty. And I'm going, yeah, I know. I think the Lord's going to find me busy. Busy doing this something. Well, what should we be doing? Let's ask Lisa Haven from lisahavennews.net. From this perspective, she's going to be finishing up her divinity school here directly this year. So we'll get her, the International School of Ministry. She'll be finishing up this year and being able to spread the word. So my question is, what should we be doing, Lisa? I mean, other than we kind of get the information, at some point you realize that freedom good, government bad, 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 bad. Then what? What do you think we should be doing?
Well, definitely not sitting around doing nothing, that's for sure. It bothers me when, Christians say, don't worry about it. I don't need to learn about what's going on. I just, sit in my comfort zone, wait for the rapture. It's one of those things that boil my blood. No, I'm not What if your timing is wrong, so to speak? What if it's, you know, what if it ends up being mid or post? Or what if it's not the time you think it is? Although I do believe we are living in that generation. God doesn't tell us to sit around, ignore politics, and do nothing, because we're going to have to answer to the Lord one day. We're going to stand before him, and God's going to say, well, what'd you do to help your country? Or what did you do with the, because I put you as a person of America in charge of your country. What'd you do? Well, I did nothing, Lord. You were coming. Ha ha. You know?
Okay, well, that belies a little bit. You're doing your country and for the country and country, God, family, country. I mean, the Arizona Breakfast Club that we do, you're going to be at tomorrow. You know, Dave's going to be speaking tomorrow. That has been around since the late 60s. So this has been over 40 years. And the gentleman that died, Harry Everingham, 94, when it finally was, you know, segued over to myself. And it wasn't because I was Christian. It was because I was freedom-oriented, libertarian, who else is going to take on the reins and not be a freaking communist? And it was, the whole pillar was God, family, country. That was his main thing. Well, you know, we're not pledging to the flag anymore. We don't do that. We'll sing, you know, it's a good time to get acquainted. It's a good time to know. And we, you know, have some fun. But the thing is that one tradition of the flag thing, I'm like, no, that's not going to, no, we're not doing that anymore. So I'm looking at, when you have, you know, God and country, to link those two things, church and state, it was like, that's down the dark side. So I'm wondering, when you say country, is it a border and boundary thing? Do you feel the sense of exceptionalism kind of deal? I mean, how does that relate a country? Help me out.
Well, I mean, you know, America. I mean, that's where we're born. That's our home. And I think we can't form some New World Order, so to speak. If we look to our past, you know, any time that they tried to form a quote world government, it never, ever, ever turned out good. And when you try to have one person in charge of it all, even if you're ruling, say, you know, by a body of 10, like the Bible tells us, you're doomed for disaster. And that's the way it is. It's, you know, and really, quite frankly, we're not going to have that peace on earth until Jesus comes back, because we're born into sin. We're a bunch of sinners. And here's the thing. Let's go back to the National Security Study Memorandum. It's NSSM 200. It was the Kissinger report put out back in 1974. Now, this report from the get-go, you know, pushed the globalist order. Not only that, and this is during the Nixon years, but it also entertained the idea of using food as a source of power. And this is something that I fear we could be looking at in the near future. Are they going to use that?
Food's going to be used as a source of power. I guarantee that one way or another.
Absolutely. And it started with this report. And, you know, fast forward a little bit, and we have Agenda 21. I think this is a baby. The Kissinger report is a baby to Agenda 21, which now they're
Rosemary's baby.
Say what?
Rosemary's baby.
Yeah, yes, Rosemary's baby, there we go. But it manipulated to this monster of Agenda 21. Now, in this Agenda 21 that I've read, what it specifically calls for the countries to handle their own populations as they will. You know, like one country has to handle depopulation, so to speak, one way, while another country has to handle it another way. Well, we know in China, they have the one-child policy law, which recently in 2016, now if you get approval from the daddy government, you can have two babies now with approval. And then here in America, they're using our GMO food. They're using our health. They're using pharmaceuticals. God told us big pharmacia was going to be a problem in the last days. He didn't say necessarily drugs. He said pharmacia. And what is pretty much almost every person on some sort of pharmaceutical, because there is no cure for anything. It's take this pill forever, amen, and take this pill to fix this. And so that's what we are in America. And this is lowering, people. And we have high rates of cancer here. Over in Asia, you have AIDS as a big weapon for depopulation there. So each country is different. And when I look to Agenda 21, it's very evident that that's exactly what they're doing, because they were told in this global order to solve the problem of humanity. And then if we fast forward to again, the United Nations meeting back last year in 2015, where they adopted the Paris Agreement. This is when they all came together, 195 different companies. And here they put new requirements and new goals. And some of those goals are very socialist and very progressive. And one of those are, let's have the richer countries give $100 billion a year to poorer countries. This is redistributing the wealth. And if we wanted a socialism style country, we'd move to Venezuela.
It's take money from poor people in rich countries and give it to rich people in poor countries. I mean, it's just so there's somebody's going to get paid off, I guarantee it. And I think, you know, as anarchist as I'm accused of being, you know, I'm not against government. I'm just against coercive government. As soon as you can find me one like that, let me know. I don't think we have enough government. I think there should be 7 billion governments. I get to be my own government of me. How about that? You know, so this is, it's just a philosophy. It's how you look at the world and how you would band together. And people of faith, I would think that they would be not coercive. Well, no, if we can't make people tithe, then it doesn't work. You know, I'm going, hey, if you got to make people tithe, then, you know, you got your own issues. You got other problems. And that's kind of how I see government. If you got to make me do something, they'll go, well, how come, you know, how did you know in the 80s and 90s, you know, not to vaccinate your children? Because the government mandated it. There's never anything good came from a government mandate, you know? And I'm going,
don't do anything they make you do. It's not good.
So I'm looking at this perspective, and you came to this and your concern, you know, from your faith, or your faith from your concern, or what sent you down this path, and at what age?
Well, my father, he was into a lot of, you know, educating us on truth, and that was even before the age of the internet, at least in my little town of like 10,000. It's just, wasn't there yet. But, and he was very big on it. Now, not as big as I've become, but, you know, just over the years, he's very strong in the Lord, very huge Christian, and, you know, he really delved into a lot of that, so.
Yep, we're a product of our environment, mom and dad. Well, you know, we'll find out when we come back. Does Lisa have children, start a family yet? How is she doing that? What can she give us as an example? We're going to find out. The generation next when we come back. Lisa Haven, news.net. Okay, so in this last segment, we want to get, I definitely want to do this next generation next thing that we're always going on about. And we go Gen Next.
Yeah, and the Common Core, the UN model UN. Lovely.
All right, when we come back, we'll do that. You know, Jen next. Are you going to be visiting us tomorrow?
Yes. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, it's in our home.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we have, you know, like a big enough yard and stuff. And
Where is that? Is
it 51st Avenue in Greenway. It was...
Peoria or Glendale?
Yeah, it's Phoenix, but it's right on the Glendale border. You know, it's where are you coming from? Where are you at in the valley?
Carefree.
Okay, you go. You just take the 101 to the 51st Avenue exit and go south 2 miles. Boom.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah, so you're not too far. The what we want to do is when we do the Breakfast Club, it's been. In the 90s, before the internet really started taking off, if you didn't go to the Breakfast Club, you didn't hear any of this stuff. I mean, you didn't know what the heck was going on. It was really a great, you know, eye-opening for a lot of people, and it was the Breakfast Club. Then it started, you know, just emails, and everybody was saturated the late 90s and early 2000s, just getting a lot of this stuff up on the net, you know. Then the videos started in 05, and by that time, you know, the Breakfast Club, it just kind of, and plus Harry was getting really old, and it just waned a little bit. And then it got to where people started needed the meat and meat space kind of thing. You know, they were wanting to, you know, kind of touchy-feely on people and meet them and talk to them and interact and, you know, in the flesh. And that started along with the Lovolution, you know, the Ron Paul thing, the 07 going up. And it started to build back up and meetups and everything that you started to have people actually, you know, physically coming together. Then I saw that there was a big, giant infusion of younger people into the movement, along with some seasoned, older senior citizens, that then it just started to age and didn't really matter. It was more philosophy. and it went much heavier, more libertarian with each. And my taking over the Breakfast Club was a big example of that, because it was traditional, hardcore, Goldwater Republican. Bob Dole is the freaking Antichrist right up until he gets the Republican nomination kind of crap, you know? And I'm going, this is, you guys are killing me. And so it became much more an understanding of what we were against. And I, when you have what they consider to be easily turned allies or a force political, we've had, hell, Napolitano spoke at the Breakfast Club. You know, all the Kyle, McCain, congressmen, it was like a touchstone for the, for anything political, certainly in the 90s. Oh, yo, the Breakfast Club has and debates of whatever. I'm debating Trent Franks on crap. So, I mean, this whole thing is just, it's changed. The fourth turning, the generation next, it's an entirely different world that we're living in now, and they have access to things like your show and your YouTube channel, and they are exposed to different things, and they can kind of just turn off their I gotta speak next thing and just, you know, like talk radio or YouTube channels, and just absorb a lot of this information. But then Freedom's Phoenix is kind of like an activist central hub of you get to, you know, do what you want, and it kind of launches, which is, well, that's where Dave Hodges started. He started writing on Freedom's Phoenix, like, God, from the beginning, like 8 years ago or more. And, you know, it just built from there. So there's I made this infrastructure for this kind of thing to happen. All right, we're going to see if we can help you. Here we go.
Their websites, and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Ba-rum.
I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need you.
Oh, we got to break free. How you do that? It's a generational thing. It is. It's a thing. You know, when you got government spending literally trillions of dollars, trillions of dollars over generation to propagandize mandatory youth indoctrinate of, you know, the government-mandated schools kind of thing. You do that, you got to spend trillions of dollars. Well, the fact that you got to spend trillions of dollars trying to turn us into automaton, whatever, they, you know, that gives you some hope right there. Oh, and it's not working. Man, give me that syringe full of, you know, notions and potions that would just, and little babies. Babies, you come out, wait, I just got my funk. You know, you put it in, I'm like, wow, is it that bad? Yeah, it's that bad. So stop, man. I mean, damn. So generation next, how we protect them, what we got to do. I got to put this in, Lisa. My children, 10 grandkids, blah, blah, the second grader, kindergarten, and one going into preschool, and then a baby, that family, they're moving. So what's the first thing that they do? Oh, what's the nice school district of the government grid system of the school district? Don't care. Does it have a traditional chart, our favorite kind of private school of a chapter out, and where's that one? And kind of, I don't care. Screw the government. What they say, their district doesn't mean any crap anyway. The best of their worst, it still sucks. So I'm going, it's all about private options. You know, where they're going. What kind of input can the parents have? Where do I select in the free market kind of deal? This is very different than it was even a decade ago. It is the mindset of the people and raising up generation next now, and the people that were, you know, the generation of the Love Evolution back in 07 are having kids. And all of a sudden, they're realizing, no, the government bad, is bad. So what they're looking for, this is the same services. They don't want to fix it. They just want to make the current system obsolete by just doing something better. So how are they doing that, Lisa? I mean, you know, what's some of your experiences on what we can do for Gen Next?
Well, I have three kids, so this is a very huge topic for me. But obviously, homeschool is always a good option, or sending your kids to a private school. There are lots of scholarships out there available for that. Now, I've actually homeschooled my kids for 9 years. I'm very aware of the homeschooling aspect and everything that goes along with it. But the thing is, there's so much attack all of those documents that I talked about, Agenda 21, the Kissinger Report, and many others, talk about the newest one that I mentioned a moment ago. All of these talk about brainwashing our children into the Agenda 21 mindset, which is there's too many people, human are scumbags, there's too many humans, you're the bad guy. So it constantly paints humans in a bad image. So if you are forced to send your kids to, say, a public school, choose charter over public. If you can go private, go private. But if you don't have that option, make sure you're educating your kids and letting them know humanity isn't the problem, because that's one of the biggest things they push. Also let them know, hey, we're not a global world. We don't want one to rule them all, because unfortunately we have model UN clubs taking place in a lot of the schools. For example, I went with a friend of mine just to a school the other day, and we had inquired there, about the clubs that they had had. She was inquiring, and one of those, oh, we have Model UN. It is the biggest club in our entire school, which means a lot of the kids. And I said, excuse me, do I interrupt? I'm like, you do know that that's pushing a global agenda and not, our, nation here in America. You know that, right? Do you have another one that promotes our freedom? No, they had nothing that talked about, America or anything about that. It was all, no, we're going in this globalist direction and the kids can pick a country and do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's one thing that we have. You get to college level and a little bit more self, do it themselves. And they have, Students for Liberty. You have young Americans, we're not going to be, communist, whatever. And these libertarian clubs and such. So there are alternatives. And we have talked to people that are trying to around the country, and we're trying to sponsor something here in Arizona to where it moves down into the high school and even junior high. And then we start accumulating authors of books that are generated towards the youth. And my four children, they went 7th to 12th grade at Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High. So I got enough WW bumper stickers in the parking lot, man, to make me hurl. But, it was a lot easier for me to deprogram, from there than the government school. And they did well. And one of my sons, he's one of those big, brainiac football captain, calculus, max out, super smart kids. And a leader and all that. Boom! Model UN. They want to take you. We're going to send you. You get to go to Washington, D.C. and visit and have a little dorm and take the summer off and a couple of weeks. And we're going to indoctrinate you. He had absolutely no interest. I go, no. Go. I got a bunch of flyers for you. Man, you will freaking penetrate the bureaucracy. We're going to just go. Come on, man. I'll pay. We'll go get some. And he's like, nah. Don't want to do it. And I'm like, all right, it's probably better. But, I was willing to spike a man, use my son to get at the core in Washington, go, how did this boy get in here? We got to have a new criteria. Well, that's how it happens. There is an infection that goes inside if you are armed at an early age to know what is the crap. Well, these kids are going in and they're learning. Oh, of course we got it. And I, as a kid, I remember in the 60s, as Cub Scouts and all that, you had United Nations. In fact, Harry Everingham, that started the Breakfast Club, it was with, Leonard Reed? Or was it Robert Lefebvre? I think it was Robert Lefebvre. In the 50s, they combined efforts together from the conservative and the libertarian-oriented people in the 50s to do away with the United Nations inside the Girl Scout handbooks. They were incorporating the United Nations, and they were successful, the Boy Scout, in a large way. You'll see the little boys going in there, and they have a state, an American flag, and a UN flag. UNICEF started going, it's Halloween, trick or treat, forgive us money, just to get you in the mindset. They make a bunch of money from that. I don't know. Yeah, no, but I tell you, man, they're indoctrinating you, and you're in school, and we're going to collectivize and think this way. So if I had the one thing that I focus, which I do as much as I can, Generation Next. So when you talk and criticize them for doing this central UN thing, is there anything to offer as an alternative?
Like an alternative for the UN thing? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you have something, it's where they have Christian schools usually have Awana or something like that. It's kind of a competition with the Boy Scouts. So you're not being, heck, in New Hampshire, they got, you know, like Pork Scouts as a mindset of, you know, taking care of your kids and teaching them these things. But I'm wondering when they come up with the, you know, central plan of we got to be and rule the world at the high school and lower level, is there any organization or effort to try and keep them from, you know, give them an alternative?
Well, with the clubs, I mean, there's always like they're optional. You could join this one or this one. But what I don't see in the schools a lot of the times is when you've got your Model UN, you don't have something that promotes, you know, your country, your nationalism. Now, there are actually clubs that do exist. That, you know, you can say, go find out the policies of what goes on here at your state level. Learn about state rights. Learn about your country. But they're few and far between. It's just because for so many years now, Agenda 21 is implemented in Common Core, Communist Core. It's implemented in all, just under the radar. In English lessons, they're pushing this. You know, oh, let's check the grammar for this sentence that talks about globalization and being a world citizen. And I'm like, you're like, okay, propaganda game. It's really in your face and it's disturbing. And these are the kinds of things that our kids are faced with on a daily basis. They're gonna face it in school. They're gonna face it when they're older. They gotta prepare for it and they gotta be ready for it. That's the bottom line.
Well, when you got something that we can help promote and do and work with, we got a lot of resources. I mean, we can bring to bear. The easing and the newspaper that we do and the show and the site, and I'm wanting to promote, you know, this kind of effort. You come across, you know, Generation Next of we're not gonna be communist. How about, you know, some freedom and the Austrian economics, something, you know, I'm all over it. One less thing I got to do. But man, I just, you know, I'm focused on the grandchildren's. Oh, we're making sure. But how do you get rid of bad guys? You breed them out. And you free some minds. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. You can expect a little more of that over at lisahavennews.net. You know, and we've been down this road before. Don't believe me? Read the New Testament. Explain it to you. We'll be right back. Scott Horton next. Wars and rumors of wars. Then, in the third hour, Jason Ditz from Antiwar.com. We're going to find out what's going on in the South China Sea. Hopefully, we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence. LisaHavennews.net. There we go. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, and I look forward to meeting you tomorrow. Thanks for having me on.
It'll be everything you expect. I'm really tall, dark, and handsome, and maybe not. All right, well, you're certainly welcome, and it'll be fun. How much time do you think you'll need? Well, I thought we were going to introduce you to the crowd there. You're going to say, you know, what's up at the thing. I'll give you a chance to say, hey, so prepare, you know, 5-10 minutes of hello.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Good to know.
All right. Surprise. All right. We'll see you tomorrow, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay. See you then. Bye. Bye.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Friday, September 30th, 2016. Silver is trading at $19.32 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,324 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $607. Antiwar.com reports with more and more U.S. airstrikes not only failing to hit their announced targets, but actually hitting the wrong people. The Obama administration is having growing criticism and questions about their policies, with the U.N. warning the U.S. to adhere to its obligations under international humanitarian law. The U.N. warning came in the wake of a deadly U.S. airstrike in Nangarhar, Afghanistan, which the Pentagon announced killed a bunch of the Islamic State fighters, but which government officials later revealed actually killed at least 15 civilians and wounded 12 others. The Afghan government is already investigating, and the UN is calling for an independent inquiry beyond that. Somalia's government, such as it is, also wants a good explanation for a U.S. airstrike on Wednesday in the semi-autonomous Galmudug region, which once again, Pentagon officials bragged about a self-defense strike that killed a bunch of al-Shabaab fighters, but which Somalia later confirmed killed 22 Somali soldiers. That incident, according to officials in Galmudug, appears to have been the result of officials in rival Puntland, another autonomous region, calling in the strike and telling the U.S. that the targets were Al-Shabaab. The U.S. appears to not only have launched the strikes without checking with Galmudug officials, but also publicly took credit for it before they bothered to find out who they actually killed. When you hear the word lobbyist, you probably think about greedy corporations, but not all lobbyists are the same. Some are fighting for the freedoms you hold dear. Liberty Lobby LLC is doing just that in New Hampshire, working hard to represent you, not some special interest group. You can help by going to libertylobby.xyz, where your contribution will give us the tools we need to ensure that your voice is heard. Visit libertylobby.xyz today to find out more. UPI reports the U.S. Labor Department finalized rules requiring federal government contractors to provide sick leave for up to 7 days per year. The White House announced the sick leave rule, along with a rule requiring companies with 100 or more workers to report how much they pay them by race, gender, ethnicity, and job category. 1 year ago, Obama signed an executive order compelling federal contractors to provide paid sick leave. The Labor Department then drafted the federal rule, which will take effect January 1st, 2017. Thomas E. Perez, the Labor Secretary, said in an interview with the Washington Post, "This is really part of a broader conversation across America about what a 21st century social compact looks like. Back in the day when Beaver Cleaver got sick and June Cleaver was home, who takes off to stay with Beaver is not an issue. In today's world of dual career couples in the workforce, our public policy has not caught up. The contractor's sick pay mandate will cover about 1.1 million workers and will allow them up to 7 days of compensated time each year." The White House said nearly 600,000 employees do not currently have one single day of paid sick leave. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. Reuters reports a commuter train plowed into a station in New Jersey at the height of Thursday morning's rush hour, killing one person on the platform and injuring more than 100 as it brought down part of a roof and scattered debris over the concourse. Witnesses described terrifying scenes as the front of the train smashed through the track stop at high speed and into the Hoboken terminal, toppling support columns and creating chaos at one of the busiest transit hubs in the New York City area. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said one person died on the platform after being struck by debris from the crash and 108 people were injured. The train's engineer or driver was seriously injured and in a hospital and was cooperating fully with investigators. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo told a news conference it was obvious the train had come into the station too fast, but it was unclear why. A couple of hundred emergency workers spent the morning shuttling in and out of the station, some carrying the injured on stretchers to ambulances outside. A major transit hub, the historic green-roofed Hoboken station is served by the New Jersey Transit commuter trains connecting much of New Jersey with the country's largest city, as well as the Port Authority Trans-Hudson subway-like system known as PATH, a light rail service and ferry service to New York. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here.
Unafeared, but relatively concerned here on Declare Your Independence. It's Friday, second hour. That means Mr. Scott Horton. Mr. Scott Horton, an anti-war radio kind of individual. ScottHorton.org, as it sounds. Make sure you get that. All right. Now, we're going to be talking about the presidential debate. We haven't talked to Scott since we had the presidential debate. We had a presidential debate, and Scott, what say ye, man? Go.
Oh, wasn't it horrible? My goodness. Hi, Ernie. How are you today?
I'm more than wonderful. And you?
I'm doing just fine. Overall take on it, I think Hillary probably won because Donald Trump just can't help himself. He's such a jerk. He can't even, you know, the average run-of-the-mill psychopath is studied enough in how other people react to know when to turn it down a little bit. You know what I mean? But he's just, I don't know what the hell his problem is.
He's 70 whatever years old.
Incapable of, yeah, he can't think to himself. I wonder what it looks like on TV right now when she's trying to talk and I'm saying, wrong, nuh-uh, that's not true, nuh-uh,
what
over
else
her the
do?
Whole time.
Well,
as though that's making her look like a liar rather than making him look like a stupid little kid.
We had the football game. It was Monday Night Football, presidential debate, twofer at the Hancocks. And it wound up the TV inside and the one out back outside that we had on the patio and so on. It was they wound up both being on the debate. And then afterwards, we threw the football game on and the post spin room crap. Nobody cared. But so we went ahead and watched the whole thing. And I couldn't sit for more than, 90 seconds or something. I sit down. I had to get up and walk and go check on the other guys and then kind of go get a drink and come back. And every time I didn't get a full on dose, I couldn't take it. It was so blah, 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 blah. And all I could think, I looked at some of the guys and I go, and you wonder why I'm like, you're still voting? Because this is one of these people are probably going to be the next president of the United States of America. Are you freaking kidding me? So and what do I got to look forward to? The Detroit News endorsed, Gary Johnson. Yay. We're all free now. But wow. It was so bad.
Let me say something about that. I've had negative things to say about Gary Johnson because, I can't really say exactly why, but it's been very frustrating to me to see him drop the ball so much. And he got really bad press the other day when he said, I'm having an Aleppo moment, when he was trying to think of the first name of Vicente Fox, who that should have been a pretty easy one. But still, he coined a phrase about his own brain fart, which is pretty bad.
An Aleppo moment.
On the other hand, an Aleppo moment is when Gary Johnson can't remember something. So, boy, oh boy, I would have told him to not coin a phrase like that. However, what didn't get the headline at all was the beginning of that interview with Tweety Bird there, Chris Matthews on MSNBC. And if you go check my Twitter feed, I tweeted it out last night. You heard about the Aleppo moment on the media, but this is some pretty good Gary Johnson right here. And so not only does he say he's against regime change, but he even elaborated and he proved that he knew what he was talking about, Ernie. He said, look at what's going on in Syria right now, where we are backing the FSA, that is arm and arm with the Islamists. And then we're backing the Kurds who are fighting the Islamic State. But of course, the Kurds are the enemies of our allies, the Turks, or maybe they're not such good allies of ours anymore. And then at that point, Tweety Bird interrupts him to start saying, something else. But so he proved that not only was he against this, but he's been reading. Ernie, Gary Johnson's been reading.
Bet
and he's learning about the thing. And so he doesn't just have a talking point to say. And I think he's even been discussing this with Weld, because Weld, one of the things Johnson said was, listen, man, no, we need to be working with Russia on achieving a ceasefire here. We're not escalating a damn thing in either way, in any way here. We want a ceasefire. We want to end this war. We want to work with the Russians to do that. And then he said, now our most recent ceasefire, it didn't work out that well. And then Weld interjects and says, yes, well, when the U.S. bombed all those Syrian troops at Deir ez-Zor the other day, that sure didn't help. And I'm like, holy crap, man, I can't believe this. Not only Gary Johnson has been reading, is taking a principled stand, is elaborating, factual, real reasons why he believes what he believes. He's got Bill Weld chiming in, too, with an effective assist. That, well, you know what? It's somewhat our fault that the most recent ceasefire hasn't worked out. We should try again.
So I mean, who is this like, pulling?
My God, man.
If you got on MSNBC with Chris Matthews up there doing their thing, and they're given some time, and their, you know, promotion of him saying stuff that we would like to have said and injecting that into the POTUS race, to benefit whom? Is that for take votes away from Trump or for Hillary, or is he doing both? Or I mean, look,
the way this works is this, right? If he gets up there and he's more anti-Trump than he is anti-Hillary, well, that could hurt Trump. But it could also hurt Hillary that, hey, this guy, Gary, is even better on Trump than she is. And that could take votes from her, right? If he gets up and he's more anti-Hillary than he is anti-Trump, well, that could take votes from Hillary. That could hurt Hillary. But it could also make him the more effective anti-Hillary and take votes from Trump. So the real lesson is just go out there and give him hell. Tell the truth like you're Ron freaking Paul and don't care. And if you help Trump or help Hillary, either way, you can't call that shot. You don't know how that's going to work out.
Do you think that them not being in the debates has finally, you know, freed him up? His whole thing was, well, I don't want to piss off those. They won't let me in the debates or something.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, the lesson should have been you're going to have to raise hell to get into the debate. So maybe now he's figured that, okay, being Jeb didn't get me into the debate. Now I need to, you know, or being Rand. Now I need to go ahead and be Ron. Now I need to go ahead and be a little bit hardcore. And I actually didn't see the clip, but there's another clip where apparently, you know, the title of it is Gary Johnson is angry about foreign policy in the debates. Now, the debate part I did see, and he just kind of seems like he's whining that he's not allowed in the debate. That part's not good. But the part about the foreign policy, I at least heard about, and people said, no, it's pretty good. Because he's saying, look, this is wrong. They're killing people over there. This has got to stop. And he's sort of giving them, you know, I would turn that motivation more into read, and master this material so that you can really do a good job fighting Hillary about it, you know. But, you know, as long as he's decided he cares, you know, apparently started hollering about it in a way that, you know, was okay for a little bit, I think yesterday.
Well, we got Jeb Bush suggest voting for Gary Johnson at private luncheon. Did you see that one?
Wow. Yeah, I've heard, you know, any of these.
The former Florida governor repeatedly suggested voting for Libertarian Party nominee Gary Johnson at private luncheon on Wednesday, whose those present tell the Daily News, seemingly going further than his previous comments that he considered voting for Johnson. Bush joked about President Johnson during a lunch focused on education reform that he hosted by the Manhattan Institute, and in a private conversation before his speech strongly recommended another person present should vote for the gaffe-prone Libertarian nominee.
Well, here's what Gary Johnson should do. Gary Johnson should denounce Jeb Bush. And he should say, I don't want any help from any Bushes. Let's talk about the Bushes, all right? Let me tell you about the Bushes, okay? And how they destroyed America and ruined the 21st century for everyone. There's a great opportunity to tell Bush, you go vote for Hillary Clinton where you belong, you piece of crap.
Oh! It's like that with ScottHorton.org. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
So, Bush, when we come back, you want to do the Bush dynasty, Jeb Bush, George Bush, or the Bushes? Which Bush are we working on here? All of them?
Scott? Yeah. Oh, sorry. My mic was off. Yeah, listen, no, I mean, you know me. My main thing in the whole world is that George Bush ruined the 21st century for everybody, like I just said there. and with his invasion of Iraq. It just freaking ruined everything. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's how Trump got the nomination, was running against the Bush Jr. legacy. And that should be Gary Johnson's exact same shtick, too, is that I don't want any help from the likes of Jeb Bush.
You know, this is one thing I'm seeing on here on the page that had that Bush thing. And then off to the right, they have these little made you look over here and who's got bigger boobs or something. But one of these, it was Brad Pitt. A Trump supporter is fighting against just about everything, and it's him. I don't understand. I need to have an opinion about, and Brad Pitt says this, and he doesn't like Trump. Got to do Trump, Brad Pitt. And why? Because Brad Pitt's in the news, you know, getting some negative with his divorce from Angelina Jolie and everything. You know, if you want to get some good press and have them, they love you in pretty pictures and not tabloid or whatever, just say you don't like Trump, and we'll plaster you all over the place, and you'd be a good guy again. You know, it's like a default for these guys.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Yeah, you know,
somebody
sense.
Sent me a funny tweet that said, whenever there's big celebrity breakup news, he always Googles airstrike to see what it is that they're distracting us from.
Right, no, absolutely. I do that. There's some stupid thing going on. I'm going, whoa, 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 whoa. I always say, check your six, man. You know, look behind you. What the hell are they sneaking up on me as I'm looking over here? And it's always something. And they used to just dump this stuff at, you know, Friday afternoon press conference at the White House, or Monday or whenever the hell they did it. They just dump it in with all the other crap and hope it gets lost. Well, now with, you know, the internet and everything, they got to, like, you know, camouflage it or distract it or put eyes over here and, you know, made you look. That's what I see it a lot. All right, here we're coming back.
You can put the Liberty Radio Network on the air in your area. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how. Broadcast.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Explain to us. You know, what does he want to explain to us? You know, Scott wants to give it. Oh, it's the Bushes start rearing their head, getting involved in this presidential election, and say something nice about Gary Johnson, libertarian. You should vote for him and not kind of man. What? What? Why would they say such a thing, Mr. ScottHorton.org? What? Well, why would they say that?
Well, Donald Trump stomped Jeb Bush's sorry ass into the ground. I mean, he not only did he stomp him into the ground, the way that he stomped him into the ground was by attacking the Iraq war, his brother's signature move. He completely destroyed permanently this Republican talking point that I'm sure you've been scratching your head about this for 10 years. How do they ever get away with saying that George Bush Jr. kept us safe? And in fact, the way Jeb, and they really did. I mean, that was a meme, a slogan, like the surge worked. That
yeah, no, they had this big 9/11 buildings come down, terrorist plane going down there, and he kept us safe. What?
Yeah, and Jeb's line in the debate, literally, he said in one sentence with a comma in the middle. I mean, it wasn't even two sentences. He said, my brother kept us safe. Don't you remember the rubble? What? So Donald Trump said, kept us safe. 9/11 happened on George W. Bush's watch. Gasp. No one in Republican politics ever said that. And at the day after the debate, Trump told the reporters, he goes, oh, yeah, that's like saying the other team scored 19 runs in the first inning, but we played a hell of a game after that. Yeah, you lost, loser. Oh, my God. And then he literally named Jeb low energy, which means can't get an erection is what that means, right? Low T Jeb, like he's Bob Dole in 1996 doing the ED pill commercials while he's running for president. And he just stomped Jeb into the ground. And Jeb being the crown prince, Jeb being the guy who I told you for years was absolutely guaranteed shoe-in to get the nomination. And it'll be him versus Hillary in the fall, our nightmare. And Donald Trump just came in and beat his sorry ass. So the entire Bush family and all of their friends are boycotting Trump. they refuse to be a good sport about their defeat and support their party's candidate. And so Bush Sr. has made it clear he's voting for Hillary. I think Jr. is refusing to comment. Laura Bush, though, has said she is voting. Bush Jr.'s wife has said she's voting for Hillary. And now Jeb is saying he's voting for Johnson. And, you know, part of that is, you know, just to spite Trump. But part of it also is the Bill Weld aspect, I think, because where Gary Johnson, he's not an ideological libertarian like you and me or like you and me would have him be. But he is more or less a libertarian in his instincts, you know, and in his impressions. Bill Weld, on the other hand, is not a libertarian. Bill Weld is a Rockefeller Republican, a rhino, a George W. Bush, compassionate conservative, centrist, so-called moderate, which means he's for everything, right? The Rockefeller Republicans, the liberal Republicans, and the conservative Democrat centrists, they're the extremists. They're the ones who are for all government policies you ever heard of that are destroying everything. Whereas the libertarians, like you and me, we're the best of the left and the right instead of the worst. We're opposed to everything. And, you know, I think Weld and Johnson just, they don't even, this is all kind of muddied up between the two of them. And I think Weld's had a strategy that I can get us some establishment Republican money and attention. But as I've said all along, that's a siren song. That's the kiss of death. The last thing in the world you want is for Jeb Bush to hitch his wagon to yours. He's going to drag you down. What you want to do is exactly what Donald Trump did. Climb the mountain by stepping on Jeb Bush's head. And don't feel bad about it. They're Bushes. They deserve the worst that you could possibly do to them. Okay, it's fine. There is no immorality in doing anything wrong to any member of the Bush family in any way. And that includes actual physical aggression. Screw it. But certainly as far as, you know, just ridiculing them and exploiting them and you know, scoring points off of them to get ahead from all of their failures. And let's get it straight. What George W. Bush did by invading Iraq in an unprovoked, aggressive invasion based on lies that he told your mom to scare her into believing that it was absolutely necessary, and based on the lie that, oh, it's only going to take a couple of weeks. On one hand, they're the biggest threat in the world. On the other hand, it's going to be the easiest war in the whole world, and they'll be over in a little while, and you'll get to have some fun.
I got you.
Oh, I'm hearing Donald Trump in my ear. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is. Yeah, I guess you don't hear. We can't hear it here. There's some crossover in the mixer. I was watching this. I was watching this crooked Hillary colluded with Lester Holt and the signal of them to go back to her and all this. And I was queuing this up. I wanted to talk to you about it, but it was just. The debate itself, as they're going through this, the one point that I wanted to bring up, and I, you know, now you spoiled my surprise. The what I wanted to bring up is that the big kind of dust up between Dr. Tamburi and I a few weeks ago, we had a big long Trump report yesterday that kind of summed up everything. The big controversy was he wanted to emphasize how much online and the traditional media are allied for Hillary in every search engine and every star, celebrity, post, video. It's just amazing the onslaught that's going up against Trump and for Hillary that is, you know, should be discussed. But I'm just like, well, of course, it's always been a bias kind of, you know, so it's getting bad enough. And when you're seeing that they make the link between what he's saying or when Hillary wants it to be brought back to her, and you start looking at these signals like they were coaching third base or something, I'm going, wow, is it that bad? Of course it's that bad. And I'm just wondering, to what end? Is it just to get Hillary elected, or is there a higher agenda, like our first hour?
It's stopping him. I mean, look, these people have convinced themselves that Trump is Hitler, when really, you know, he's pretty freaking horrible. You know, the difference between him and Hitler is Hitler had real beliefs and a real agenda and, you know, a willingness to stop at absolutely nothing to get the power, to get his way. That's not Trump. Trump is doing this half on a lark, for Christ's sake. He doesn't have an ideology. Not really. He doesn't know anything. You know, there's this new thing in the New York Times, a review of a book about Adolf Hitler that basically, at least the way the review tells it, dumbs Hitler down to nothing but a Trump. But that's just not true. You know, you read about Hitler and you realize, wow, what an obsessive, unique individual that, you know, this freaking guy, there's just no comparison to that kind of fanaticism. And to compare that to Donald Trump, it's just completely ridiculous. But they're just terrified of a right-winger coming from outside of the official National Review GOP power structure.
Okay, and let's talk about that when we come back. The official power structure, how do we recognize it? Who's in it? When somebody, all of a sudden on Fox News, we're going to the bench of this guy, say that, is that a sign? Yeah, when we come back, let's do that. I want to get into, you know, the same old, because we have, like, the PNAC stuff that was going in leading up to 9-11, then after 9-11, and it's being kind of handed off. And it would be guys like Rubio, you know, Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina. Where the hell did that come from? So, I mean, you bring these guys and you go, yeah, this is the representation, and it was, seems like it was everybody versus Trump at first, and Rand got sucked into it. He was like doing, carrying the water for somebody, and it didn't work out because he wasn't his own guy.
Well, he was carrying for himself, he thought, but he's a dumbass, man. I mean, you know, I've been saying this stuff about Rand all along, same stuff I say about Gary Johnson. If you want to get ahead, be Ron. You know? This is the perennial fight. You know this better than me, Ernie. This is the perennial fight in the Libertarian Party. Do we want to be ideological and educational, or do we want to run to win? And the answer is, no, stupid, those are the same thing. Be ideological and educational. That's how to win.
Thank you.
Because if you run as Republican who can't possibly win, because you're running against a Republican who's going to win, why the hell would anybody vote for
you? All the forces have to do, the Coke-a-Puss or any of these guys, they have to go, you know what? Well, my opinion is that you got to be more mainstream and everything, and here's a $100,000, you know, incentive check that says that you should have that opinion.
And what do they ever win out of decades of playing
nothing,
it that way?
Nothing.
You know? Meanwhile, Ron Paul went out there and said, abolish the empire every day for a year and a half and turn the world upside down and change everything.
No, Scott, I'm telling you, I went through decades of, look, if you guys, and they go, no, we don't want to do that. Why? Well, it's not going to work. Nope, we want to do it this way because it's more centralized control of the campaign if we make money and we agree with and somebody give us some. You know, I'm just going, whoa, then that's obviously not your goal, is to have this big social culture impact of, oh my God, even win. I mean, that's not your goal. Your goal is to make that. It happened in 96 when Rick Tompkins, the state chair in Arizona, was running against Harry Brown. And they were going on about the Federal Reserve, the stock market. They were doing it. We were 96. There were some issues going on, Wall Street crap at the time. And the Harry Brown campaign, the Libertarian Party guys, you know, the Emerling Cloud people, they came to us and they said, look, what we need you to do, blah, 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 we're all on the same team here. We need you guys to stop pointing fingers at Wall Street. It's affecting our fundraising. And I go, one, you're confusing me if somebody gives a crap. And two, good! So it was the Libertarian Party. They were they're going, no, we can't help you out. You know, Tompkins is bringing up, Libertarians say this about that, and that's how you get the breaks on the money. And that was been they're always trying to appease somebody else. Well, it's not working.
And you know what? But look at Ron Paul. He didn't raise a bunch of money from a bunch of millionaires. He raised millions of dollars from a bunch of yous and me's.
Yep.
Right? He made way more money. I mean, look at Gary Johnson right now. Where's the Ron Paul Revolution? The Ron Paul Revolution is not inspired by Gary Johnson. They don't believe in Gary Johnson, so they're not rallying to Gary Johnson. If they were, he would have a lot more money than he's made trying to be polite to Bill Weld's friends. It's obvious, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I got to try and get the next music here. Hold on. That's good. All right. We'll be back in 5 seconds.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. You know, we're talking off air a little bit. It's just, you know, I've been through this, you know, a bunch. bunch of time. You know, you ever do that and play and getting with and kind of working the media and having with the powers and the money and the kind of, you ever do that? You ever do that? Check the boxes a bunch of times. And I tell you, it only takes a little bit of money in the right place to try and get you to emphasize something like flat tax. Something like a little bit of Afghanistan war. Something like you get one little talk show host or somebody say something nice about, boom, featured speaker tell you how you're going to have to, you know, compromise to get more of attention. It never works. And when you saw this Johnson Weld thing, I was there, man. I'm telling you, I talked to Weld, Johnson, went through it. I get it. They go, well, I get it. Can't help you. I told Gary, I said, I can't help you with this Weld thing. You want to come on the show, just you, that's fine. I can't help you with this Weld thing. I can't help you. So what is it that now they're starting to get some attention? Now they're starting to get a little foreign part. Now they're starting to get, you know, they're blipping in the polls. Now they're going to start being in the kingmaker role now. So then they give them to say, oh, what about the debates? What do you think, Scott? They ever going to make any of these debates?
I think they could, man. You know what? I really think, what the hell? I'll just tell you, man. I've been writing these giant essays briefings to Gary Johnson, basically. And most of them just about the wars, but some of them about, you know, politics and his role in the campaign and what he should be doing. And I've been trying to tell him, I think you'll agree, he obviously hasn't been listening to me very much, but I think maybe now he's beginning to. Because, you know, like you're saying, playing Rand hasn't worked. Right. So now he's not he wasn't even in the first debate. Is he going to be able to get in a second or third? And are they even going to have four or five? Doubtful. Right. It'll probably only be, you know, two more. Can he get in them? The only way he can get in them is by making a big splash. So far, all of his headlines have been flubs. Gary Johnson gets something wrong. Hardy har 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 is every headline he's gotten so far this summer.
That's the only headlines they're going to give him. Why? We don't understand
this? It's because he hasn't been saying anything that's worth quoting this whole time. You know, he went on CNN and they said, well, what are you going to do about terrorism? And he said, well, you know, it's a very complicated thing. It should be a very interesting project to tackle once I'm the president. What the fuck? The answer is, I'm going to end the war. That's right, lady. The war is the cause of terrorism, not a reaction to it. La, la, la. Let's talk about truth. Let's tell the truth about what's going on here and what needs to be
so
stopped.
So who, what is influencing?
And he didn't take it. He didn't take the opportunity. So I'm
what's
thinking
influencing
that now he's
his campaign?
That he needs to.
Who's,
you know,
influencing his campaign? What's influencing his campaign?
Look, I think he looks up to Weld. I think Weld is his mentor, basically. And so what he needs is to break from the idea entirely that moderation is the winning ticket. You know what? Whatever. I don't care. I'm going to go ahead and say it. The first time I talked to him, the first thing I said to him, I said, before we talk about the Middle East, let me just say to you, dude, that I understand how you must be so tempted by the never Trump establishment attention and money. The media, the money, that there's neoconservatives plus regular establishment conservatives who hate Trump, who you must be thinking that that's an avenue for you. But let me warn you that that is a siren song that will destroy you, that any support that you could get from those people will only hurt you. You might as well be endorsed by George Soros or something. You don't want their help. You want to run against them. You're running against the GOP establishment. That's how Donald Trump just got the Republican nomination, was by running against the GOP. And that's what you got to do. What you need is the Ron Paul revolution of regular human beings to rally to you, not establishment power. And then you know what he said to me, Ernie? He said to me, that was the mistake that Rand Paul made. And then I said, yeah, exactly, man. You know, you're so right. So you already know what I'm saying. You already understand that no matter what Rand did, his name was still Paul. Well, let me tell you something, Gary. Your name is still Paul, too. Your name, libertarian candidate, your name might as well be Ron Paul. They're never going to love you. They're never going to really help you win. The establishment power is never going to rally to you. You need the people. And the only way to get them is to be Ron. And what did Ron do? Was Ron Mr. Purest Libertarian on every single pet issue of Libertarians? No. What he was a hardcore truth teller and a hardcore opponent of all of the worst things that the American government does. War, torture, murder, lies.
You know, I'm hoping that this Johnson campaign is educational for the next, you know, breakout. And the next breakout is not going to be like a Trump thing. They got their populist bellicose, Putin, whatever the hell this, you know, I got bigger bicep and a bigger bank account and a bigger jet than you. And I'm just hoping that the next guy learns from all these lessons, and it's going to be somebody with some money that's really going to be libertarian. You know, Peter Thiel runs or something, you know, and becomes even better. You know, but the one thing that a lot of people didn't pick up on, and I can't find it, I'm asking the audience to help me out here. Publisher@freedomsphoenix.com. Send me a screenshot of this. This is what happened. When it was a Labor Day thing and they had the rickrolling of Trump, yeah, I'm going to talk about birth certificate, something kind of, and you'll get some juicy, and here comes CNN and all the cameras, and then he shows all these Medal of Honor winners, and they say, we love Trump and stuff. Well, he got you. During that whole buildup, they had the camera at the airport, and it's focused in on Trump's plane, waiting for Trump to get off of Trump's plane. Here's the motorcade of the black SUV, Trump's plane. And at the end, finally, when he's driving, as they pull back a little bit and they watch the motorcade go, they go over almost, I think it's identical, 757s, 37, whatever, it's a big, you know, Boeing jets. There's one Trump plane, and they show two Hillary-logoed jets parked right by it. It's Trump, and then, oh, Trump and his plane, the rich Trump, and he's, you know, the elite Trump. Boom! Two Hillary planes. And I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? Oh, I want that screenshot. I go do an image search. Can't find it. And it was plain as day right there. Trump plane, two Hillary jets. And what's amazing to me is not that that happened. I mean, I thought that was kind of cool. You know, who's elitist now? Well, you can't find that. And I'm going, how the hell can that even be possible? Then I remember Carly Fiorina. She was, you know, NSA, CIA, given all the servers to, you know, NSA for surveilling, and all the Snowden stuff is on the servers they provided, kind of crap. And I'm going, then she's in behind the scenes intelligence community. She ran for U.S. Senate in California. Then she was on McCain's campaign. All that. Not a single picture that you can see that's not her pose 1, 2, 3 behind a lectern or something, or a podium. And I'm going, who the hell does this? How is that even possible? And I'm just, so audience, you got, you know, save video or find one of them, CNN holding and looking and doing that one sweep of just Trump and two Hillary planes. I want that graphic. And I knew I should have done it. As I'm watching, I go, I should take a screenshot of this. And I didn't. And I, for exactly this reason, I'm kicking myself. Did you ever see that?
No, I did see Trump complaining that she was ripping off his shtick, that was his thing, was he would always give a talk at the airport with his plane in the background, and now she's doing the same thing.
Two planes! Saying, yeah, but she's got two!
She's copying me.
Got two! Two planes! And I'm like, wow, they want to play. He's like jealous? Hell, I'd be pointing out, look, don't give me crap, she's got two! So anyway, I just thought I'd observe that. All right, well, before, you know, we're going at the end of this segment. When we come back, we got to get an update on, you know, thermonuclear third world war and the issues of that and the POTUS race of Syria, in Russia, and oh my God. And then in the next hour we have from antiwar.com, we got Jason Ditz is going to finally give me my South China Sea, damn it. You know, we're going to find out about that. Scott Horton, more. ScottHorton.org when we come back. We'll see what's going on in Syria and, what we got to worry about. Just a little bit. Yeah, I'm going to get my South China Sea, man. Damn it.
Yeah, man, I can't keep up, dude.
Donna,
I'm trying to
go
write
ahead
this book about Afghanistan. Or this, that's a slip. It's a chapter about Afghanistan, but the chapter is now 50,000 words, which is, you know, almost a book on its own.
Okay, now one chapter is 50,000 on what?
Yeah, on Afghanistan. I'm going to end up breaking it into two. It'll be Bush years Afghanistan and Obama years Afghanistan, I guess. It'll be two different chapters. But even then, they're 25,000 words each, and that's way too long anyway, you know, right there. So it's going to have to be way cut down. I should be much further along in my book right now, but
keeps happening.
Well, the Afghan war's been going on for 15 years, so there's so much to say about it, and I'm really trying to pare it down and keep it at a
minimum. What is the consistent theme? Is it same people or morphed into some other problem that they're trying to solve another problem with a problem, or is it just the same thing?
You know, the first theme, the overall theme is we didn't have to invade Afghanistan at all. We could have negotiated the handover of all the Al-Qaeda guys, including Osama, but they didn't want to negotiate.
They wanted to set off a Hiroshima bomb.
First thing. Yeah, and then the second part, and then, yeah, there's the whole, you know, the doctrines of empire and control of Eurasia and keeping China out.
It's just a demonstration of what we can do.
Well, and it's also, as the Army guys put it, it's fighting the same one-year war 15 times in a row.
Yeah.
Because what happens is the Army, they do these tours and rotations, and the new guys never know who's who or what the hell is going on, and it's basically like starting over trying to do their pacification campaign or whatever on a yearly basis. And all the people that we backed last year are the people we put in Guantanamo or Bagram this year. And then we let them out again, and then they're the governor and the police chief again next year. And then they just go around and around and around. It's a total disaster. I mean, I'm not saying I think they could have won anyway, but boy, these guys sure as hell couldn't win. The U.S. Army and the U.S. National Security Council, the American Pentagon, our secretaries of defense. I mean, it's like a freaking Monty Python skit over there. It really is just it's laughably tragic, Ernie. It's just a disaster.
Well, I mean, is there any light? Are they starting to, you know, are they? What is Obama trying to do now? Is he wants to extricate, you know, or is he going
to
double down?
He wants to keep it on the lowest boil possible until he can get the hell out of office and let it be somebody else's problem. Same as George W. Bush. I mean, today they just announced that Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who is not a Taliban but is a former CIA-backed Pashtun Mujahideen who has been allied with the Taliban for the last 15 years. Him and his party. His party has basically already sort of been reintegrated. Well, now Hekmatyar himself has come back and today, or last night, I guess, signed a deal with a peace agreement with the government in Kabul that says that he gets to come back to Kabul and he gets to bring 20,000 of his fighters with him. Now, we're just supposed to cross our fingers and say, okay, well, I guess they're just going to integrate into the government and his 20,000 fighters are going to get jobs as cops and they're just going to all work real well with Dostum's men and the Tajiks. I don't think so, man. I think that they just led a Trojan horse right into Kabul and that this could be the start of a whole new horrible conflict. And this guy, Hekmatyar, you know, he's the guy that throws acids in the ladies' faces for not wearing a burqa and that kind of thing. So, yeah, no, total disaster and will be the next 15 years, too.
Hey, what about Syria?
Well,
what's going on there?
Music's playing, right? Or not? Is my clock wrong?
Yeah, no, we're coming.
Free to listen to. It's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip in on the right side of the page at LRN.FM.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Song we sing, fears we will die. You can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, and you smile on your brother, everybody get together.
be in certainly in a POTUS race, you would think that this would be a theme of somebody. Who's the peace guy out there? Well, sure as heck not the Democrat. You know, Republican, I just bomb the shit out of them. I don't care. I mean, you know, might as well just be bomb Iran. You know, so I'm going, all right, well, what about peace, from Jill Stein, the Green Party? She got anything to say about it? I don't know. You're not allowed to know. What about Gary Johnson?
She's great. Yeah. Hey, she is great, by the way. And that's right. You're not allowed to know. They're never going to tell you about her. And she's who knows what ridiculous economics she believes in, right? The Green Party candidate. But I've interviewed her once, and I took her on a tour around the world. And not only is she an anti-interventionist, she knows what she's talking about, Ernie. She clearly cares. She clearly cares. She reads about this stuff. She's interested. Let me tell you about the terrible situation of the Marine Corps in Okinawa. I mean, I'm making that up. I forget if that was one of her real answers, but it might as well have been, basically. You know what I mean? She knows. She's very well-versed in the entire American empire. She really is against it.
You know, this is the one thing that I get from when progressives and greens and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're really great on anti-war. You know, look at all, but it always comes down to, do you know how much one missile costs and how much we could steal your money and use that towards building a bridge or something?
Yeah.
But I'm going,
you're right.
I go, well, at least we get a bridge.
No, because... No, they do care. I think they in general and clearly she does care about what the American empire does to its innocent victims overseas.
Yeah, if they're stealing my money to build me a bridge or a road or I get a spaceport or something, I get something. At least I get something.
We all say the same thing. That money would be better spent here by us. You know, cut our taxes and let us keep our own money and spend it, which is a variation on the same theme, which is why should Lockheed get all this money? Why should Israel get all this money just to kill people? It's ridiculous. We're
tired
of it.
Well, we can, build more bridges here. I mean, at least they make that. If I got a progressive green up there saying anti-war, but we're still going to steal your money for here.
Debate, right? Trump said, yeah, we want a whole new deal. We're going to rebuild all the bridges and all the highways and all the airports. Which he didn't say instead of having an empire. In fact, he said before in his big speech that it was really funny. Remember this? About 6 months ago, he gave his big foreign policy speech and he goes, the American empire, or he didn't say the empire. He said the American military is way overextended. We've got bases all around the world. We've got all these wars. We're way overextended. And here's what we're going to do about it. We're going to build up the American economy more so that we can afford it.
And get it. Is he about building a lot more ships or upgrading the Navy and stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He wants to, said specifically, yes, he wants to increase the size of the Navy by tens of ships. He wants to increase the size of the Army by a few divisions. He wants to increase the size of the Marine Corps. He wants to spend more money overall. He and Hillary Clinton are both agreed that the sequester, which is a congressional manufactured cap on military spending, is basically high treason and must be overthrown because boo-hoo, we've got the weakest military. We must rebuild the military, they say, even though Obama, adjusted for inflation, has spent more money on the military, far more year by year, his entire 8 years in power than George W. Bush did, even including 2003 and 2004 and the invasion of Iraq, and spent more than Ronald Reagan at the height of brinksmanship and the restarted Cold War of the 1980s. And all the nuclear missile spending and all of that then. He's spent the most on the military since even FDR. He beats Truman, who finished up World War II. And yet we're supposed to believe... by the way, all the next five most powerful states on the planet are our closest allies. And then the next two after that are our friends, at least, and our trading partners, frenemies, at worst.
Yeah, like
Russia and China.
Pakistan's in, and then they're out. But, and we got Indian.
Britain, France, Germany, these are America's pet satellite states, not our competitors in the world.
I do want to talk right now is India and Pakistan with the threat of thermonuclear freaking Kashmir. That's been a hot spot waiting to go up forever. And all of a sudden they pulled it off the shelf and made you look.
I don't know that's what happened there.
I don't know. What do you know?
That's a perpetual conflict there, a very serious conflict over Kashmir, because it's mostly a Muslim state, but it's ruled by India, and the Pakistanis want it. The people of Kashmir want independence. The Indians will never give it up, and there's constantly. If you look at antiwar.com, there are constantly skirmishes in Kashmir.
Okay,
so,
well, why is that all of a sudden? See, this has been going on
for
a long time.
Well, there was a pretty
time.
Bad one. I mean, what happened was the Indians struck and killed a bunch of Pakistanis inside Kashmir, claiming that it was a preemptive strike against some, you know, militants crossing the border and doing strikes into India, which it may or may not have been. It was a pretty severe one. But, you know, what would really be a change would be if you really saw strikes inside Pakistan or inside India. But as long as they're killing each other inside Kashmir, it's horrible, but it's regular and doesn't usually escalate beyond that. So far, it hasn't. But you know what? You should listen to my most recent interview of Eric Margolies about this, because he's on it, man. And he really did a great job of explaining what's going on. It's on my website.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah, you see, you get all the goodies. You know, we'll you know, take from you as much as we can here. Go to the archive at scotthorton.org, and you see all these interviews that he has with these people that are writing about this. Heck, a lot of them are traveling there, doing stuff, journalists embedded in and the country of the dirt hut of I'm writing. And that is one thing that's changed, even in the short time. Well, you've been doing over a decade. So, well, about a decade. So a decade of you, you know, doing this radio and interviewing these people, has the technology allowed them to get closer to what the real story is? Have you noticed a change?
Well, I mean, I guess so, yeah. Like, well, I just finished interviewing, recording one with Joe Loria, who's in Erbil in Iraqi Kurdistan, and he's hearing from people rumors out of Mosul that the Islamic State are not on the streets. Like, the IS cops are not out everywhere cutting people's hands off for smoking cigarettes and their usual garbage. And that means either they fled Mosul, or it means that they're preparing for the coming battle and they're not wasting time being street cops right now because they're, you know, getting into soldier mode, or we don't really exactly know what. But yeah, I mean, I think it's easier to answer your question. I think it's easier for him to get rumors out of Mosul now than it was before, you know, due to Skype and due to instant messaging applications and all that kind of thing.
Okay,
I mean,
so you have a book coming out, you know, that's you're going to be focusing on the Middle East, and you got, like you said, you're saying 50,000 words on just freaking Afghanistan, but it's its own book. But, you know, what's going on now? I mean, you've always been focusing on Syria. Before I let you go, you got to give me an update Syria. What's going on?
Well, we had a ceasefire, and it all fell apart. The Americans bombed a Syrian military installation, and then somebody bombed a food convoy, an aid convoy, and the Americans immediately blamed that on the Syrians and the Russians, and it may have been them. I really don't know. But the UN initially did too, but then backed off and said, well, we really don't know. But in any case, it led to, and you know what, the bombing of the Syrian military installation, it was said to be an accident. And I think that there's like a 50-50 chance that it was government work and good enough. On the other hand, it very well could have been insubordination on the part of the Defense Department, undermining and destroying a diplomatic agreement reached by John Kerry and Sergey Lavrov on this ceasefire. In Obama's lame duck times, I think that's a real concern, that the military is basically insubordinate and refusing to even reach a peace agreement with the Russians or stick to one.
You know, this is why it's so important. Presidents, you know, they fire and hire generals and put in forth in their will. If it comes down to one guy making a split decision, do I push or not push the button? You know, and it's just because they don't, I don't think it's a video game that they're running from the White House. They have to count on people, at least this week, or artificial intelligence doing it next week. I mean, we're, you know, we better have some philosophy, understanding what's happening and how we're going to unwind this for our grandchildren. Well, who's helping us? Mr. Scott Horton, scotthorton.org. Scott. scotthorton.org, not .com. .com is another filthy journalist that won't give him the .com. Oh, it's .org. scotthorton.org. There you go. Got that in, so get it right. All right, man. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hell yeah. Appreciate it, dude.
All right, bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear. You say that 10 times, huh? Huh? It's easy to say. No fear. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Ooh, that was a good one. Okay, what we're going to do is now we're going straight from Scott Horton to Mr. Jason Ditz, get even more in-depth on some of the update on anti-war radio we're going to be doing today. Antiwar.com, he's the one of the news editors at anti-war, the news editor at antiwar.com. You know, Jason's latest article is on Pakistan, and you know, and India is doing in the news, and what's going to happen there? Well, China has an interest around there somewhere doing something. Well, what's going on? We got Afghanistan, then Pakistan, India and Pakistan going at it. Pakistan and Afghanistan have kind of, it's a bunch of stands out there. We're in trouble. So I'm going, all right, Jason's going to help us out. Jason, can you help us understand what the heck is going on? You demand.
Well, I will certainly try.
Thank you.
Pakistan and India have been a mess for a long, long time, and they're still a mess.
Well, tell me what the issue is. I mean, I'm trying to just lump it up real quick. You have India that's under British rule. Gandhi comes in, passive resistance. We won't play. We're going to go make salt on the beach and bite me. And then all of a sudden, it just becomes obvious that, you know, 100,000 Brits can't, you know, control tens of millions of Indians, and they figured it out. And then they go, nope, we break with thee, we break with thee. And then India, without that consolidating British Empire, broke up into Hindu and Muslim, basically. You know, they had a separate, and they go off, and that's how Pakistan was created, as I remember. And then you have India, and then there's like this common, who's going to get Kashmir? And Kashmir has been under, you know, it's mostly Muslim, but it's under Indian control. Ouch, quit it. We're going to have a thermonuclear war over this Kashmir thing, and the Kashmirans are going, hey, man, can we just be left alone and none, y'all? And that's kind of where we're at now. Go from there.
Oh, right. And really, from the Kashmiri perspective, or at least from a lot of the Kashmiris' perspective, it's not a question of India or Pakistan. A lot of them want independence. They don't want to be part of either. But India controls a large chunk of it. Pakistan controls a chunk of it. And there's this line of control between the two, which isn't really a border because neither side recognizes the other's control of the other side of it. But over the past couple of days, India reported that they had launched some ground raids across the line of control. They were aiming to go after some Kashmiri separatist militants. But they also got in some fights with the Pakistani troops, of course, because they're guarding that line of control to try to keep the Indian troops out of Pakistan. So we end up with another of
one country's troops on another country's troops. Then,
right.
Then what?
And there are countless of these little skirmishes between India and Pakistan throughout the years. It seems like several times a year they'll have these little you know, some firing across the border, one or two people get killed. This time, though, the cross-border raid is kind, or cross-line-of-control raid is kind of a different thing because, well, it's been believed India's done this before. They've never really publicly said, oh, well, we sent troops across the line of control before. And that's a big deal. That's Pakistan says that they would consider that an act of war if it turns out that that's actually what happened. and Pakistani officials are openly saying, well, we might have to use tactical nuclear weapons to defend Pakistani soil from Indian invasion. And there are a lot of grievances on both sides here. This stems from an attack by some Kashmiri militants against Indian troops. They killed 18 troops a couple of weeks ago. There are also arguments over water rights over some key rivers that flow between India and Pakistan, which India has threatened to use more of the water, meaning less of the water will be available for Pakistan to use. And that's really Pakistan's primary source of water. I mean, they don't have vast desalinization plants or anything on the coast.
Explain to me, you know, Pakistan's position in the. I mean, it has always been we're friendly with India, and it's a, you know, I don't know, 100 million of a bunch of people or billion. No, God, they're like 700-800 million or some crap like that, aren't they?
Well, they're enormous.
And then Pakistan, we're like with Pakistan, it's kind of been an ally, not an ally, kind of an ally, sort of an ally, not, you know, I'm going, what is the role Pakistan in our military support and presence there? And so where's Pakistan in the sphere of the American empire now?
Well, it's complicated. Certainly, the United States would like to consider Pakistan a close ally because with the Afghanistan occupation, it would certainly be convenient to have Pakistan right there as an access to the ocean, or at the very least to the Persian Gulf. They certainly had that in the past with some of the military dictators like.
Yeah, what's his name?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the one thing that, you know, if you got more on Pakistan, then, you know, that definitely, because that's in the news now. But the one reason I was excited about having, you know, you come on, and I've been on Scott Horton's ass to get me on South China Sea, and he has absolutely no interest. So I'm just need, you know, the South China Sea thing is not getting enough attention, you know, as far as I'm concerned. So what can you help us out with? What's going on there?
Sure. It's Pervez Musharraf, by the way. I don't know why I was drawing a blank on his name. Was Pakistan's military dictator for about a decade there. The South China Sea, though, there are a lot of, well, I would call them islands, and I think most people would call them islands, but according to Hague tribunals, they aren't technically islands because they can't sustain a independent culture. But there are a lot of islands or land masses, at the very least, around the South China Sea. And there are half a dozen countries that claim these mostly empty islands. China, you know, since this is the South China Sea, obviously is one of the big ones. They claim the bulk of the South China Sea, but their claims conflict with pretty much everybody else's claims, and those claims all conflict with each other. The United States has sort of made it their business to back everybody else's claims to the extent that they conflict with China. And it's sort of weird because if there's a conflict between, say, Taiwan and Vietnam over who controls what, the U.S. says, well, you guys should work that out diplomatically. We don't need to make this a big deal. But when it's Vietnam versus China or the Philippines versus China, it becomes a thing where the U.S. is backing militarily the claim of the power other than China.
So anybody but China, anybody but Trump, anybody but, I mean, you know, it's just, and what's the philosophy behind it? I don't know. Whichever one we can rule with our aircraft carriers. Well, it's a Navy arms race again. We're talking about it when we come back. Okay, let's go ahead and take some notes here, what you're ready to talk about. Go ahead and, you know, hit me with some issues and geographical locations you want us to get into when we come back.
We can talk about anything, really.
Well, I need to get some information. This the South China team up. We're doing joint exercise of whatever and kicking butt. And then we got the Philippines going, yeah, we got this joint military naval exercise coming up, but you can pretty much count on that's the last one. You know,
right. And,
I'm all buddies with China and stuff. You ready on Philippines?
Yeah, that seems like an important one.
Philippines. And hopefully that, you know, kind of segue in some more South China. I'm telling you, I am really wanting to get some. And if you got a suggestion of someone that should come on, get me up to speed and spend an hour and we go through and freaking South China Sea, I'm on it. You know, you got anybody you suggest?
Well, I'm not really sure. There aren't a lot of people that cover the South China Sea.
I don't know. It's not big enough. There's not enough thermonuclear superpowers involved in it. Making islands, pissing off Japan. I mean, what the hell they got to do to get some attention? You know what I mean?
Well, I'll give it some time. Once they start drilling for oil or for natural gas offshore, then it'll start being a bigger deal.
All right, but when we come back, we'll do the Philippines, see where it takes us, okay?
Okay.
All right, thanks.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and from antiwar.com and editor Jason Ditz. You know, one of the things I wanted to make sure it's in the news we wanted to talk about is the Philippines. The president of the Philippines, it starts with a D, and I don't care. He's one of they, them, those. He's kind of this Trump character. He came in, yeah, you want to get rid of this drug? You want to get rid of the drug dealer? You know, elect me. We'll take care. And he put a bounty out on all drug dealers free. It's the purge. It's a freebie, man. It's a, you know, you just got, you, he's a drug dealer, boom, dead, knew he asked no questions. 1800, like immediately, boom, they took out the bag, got boom, they're done. And they're like all turning themselves in. Hey, I'll go to jail, man. They're going to kill me. So then what happens? All of a sudden he goes and he has, you know, these guys are doing their drug dealing and boom, they're dead. And the world went, hey, you can't kill drug dealers. You know, you can't do anything. They go, yeah, watch me. Well, then the U.S. starts putting pressure. He's Trump. It's got Trump stuff that you do. He says, you know what? I don't need you, and I want to be buds with China and Russia and whoever else wants to be buds with them. We do trading partners, and we don't have to have on the dollar and bite me. And all of a sudden, he says, there's joint U.S.-Philippine naval exercises that are coming up here directly. He goes, that's probably the last one. We're done being your puppet guy. So we got Jason Ditz on, you know, to help us understand this from anti-war. What's going on with the Philippines, man? How much did I miss?
You've got a good start there. This is a dramatic shift for the Philippines. Basically, since the Spanish-American War, the Philippines has been an American, well, first an American colony and then an American ally.
Well, as Scott Horton would say, he's sock puppets.
that's a good way of putting it. And it's incredible to think that, in fact, this segues right into the South China Sea comment, because one of the big territorial disputes is between the Philippines and China over some of these islands. And the United States heavily backed the Philippines over these islands, not because they really care who gets them, but because it was a good way to needle China. And they had these joint patrols. They have these annual war games. And this President Duterte, who, you know, certainly has a lot of domestic problems of his own, is really shifting foreign policy priorities for the Philippines. He got into it a bit with Obama over the last month in Asia when they were both there for conferences they were supposed to meet. And someone in the media asked Duterte, what will you do if Obama brings up the all the drug dealers you're killing? And he just went off on this screed about Obama being a son of a whore and how dare he even consider asking about the drug dealers, and he would tell him it's none of his business. And so then the meeting didn't happen. And ever since then, he's been kind of at odds with Obama. He's said that the Philippines isn't so interested in buying U.S. weapons anymore because all the U.S. ever wants to sell them is warplanes, and what are we supposed to do with all these F-16s? He says we're going to start shopping around with Russia and China because they might offer us better deals on things and offer us things that we can actually use. And with China, that's particularly interesting because, like I say, there's this maritime dispute. But on top of that, he's also said he's seeking alliances with both Russia and China. He's saying this upcoming war games, which, you know, every year they have this war game and then they immediately are planning for the next one. In fact, Pentagon officials have said they're already planning for next year's. But he's saying, well, there's not going to be a next year's. This is basically it as far as these war games go. He says there won't be any more joint patrols between the U.S. and the Philippines because, and as he puts it, the Philippines doesn't want to get sucked into a U.S. naval war with China.
Let's give a map. I got a map up where that was on the video. Let me kind of give a description on the radio what we're talking about here. If I go to northern Philippines there, I got, you know, within, 500 miles, you have Hong Kong, Taiwan, Vietnam, Cambodia. You know, you go a little bit further, like 1,000 miles, and you got Singapore, of course, China, South Korea, Japan. It's all, the Philippines is like the midpoint between Vietnam and Taiwan. You know, you got Hong Kong there, you know, Japan, South Korea. This is the Philippine, this South China Sea thing is damn right in the middle of everything. You want to do any business in Asia, you know, Southeast Asia, there you are. And I'm going, okay, so Philippines strategically is a very prominent kind of, and they're starting, and this guy Duarte, where he's feeling it, he knows it, he's like, yeah, you have not been a good partner with us, Mr. USA, and we can leverage our geopolitical positioning here with somebody other than you, you scumbags. Well, then what does the U.S. do? They just kill you, you know? You know, they do stuff. So I'm just going, all right, so what are we doing here? The Philippines, has it raised that level of interest on the planet, or are we looking at, you know, it's just one of the long line?
No, it's getting quite serious. In fact, we've had the White House and the State Department issuing some very provocative statements about Duterte, saying, you know, this is the thing with democracy, is that the voters need to be more responsible than to elect someone like him, which I can't recall another occasion in which the U.S. has so publicly condemn the voters of another country for voting for someone that in retrospect we didn't like being elected. It's really incredible. And the thing is, the United States has always sort of couched this potential naval war with China as something to defend the Philippines, that we're obliged under treaty to defend the Philippines militarily. This dispute over the islands is sort of the leverage that would get us into that war. And now the Philippines is saying, we don't want this war. This is, America seems like they're interested in starting a war with China, and we don't want any part of it. So it's really getting in the way of the U.S.-Asia pivot, which was aimed at having more military assets, more naval assets in the Pacific.
So now it's like they're going to kick out MacArthur from the inside. And they go, we got to invade and we got to take over and be back. Oh, be back. Well, they don't want you back. Now what? So I'm wondering, when we come back, you know, we'll delve into this a little bit more, because I want to know, when is the next scheduled naval exercise? And we got China and Russia joint exercising out there? Are we going to have the U.S. and allies joint exercise in the Philippines, over the Philippines, or the South China Sea with Russia and China there, and then stuff and wars happen? And the Philippines said, you know what? We'd rather not be ground zero, so peace out.
Well, that's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. I got something I got to do real quick. We'll be back in less than 4 minutes.
Okay.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Thursday, gold is $2 lower at $1,321 per ounce. Silver is down 6 cents at $19.18 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $603. With silver heading lower, this is a great time to buy on the dip. Get started today and give us a call at 800-874-9760. Or visit us online at rrbi.co.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't.
Yeah, even the Jordan River has bodies floating. I mean, when it actually happens, you see it in the news, and you're like, damn, has any of this stuff ever changed? Not really. Okay, so I want to kind of get on this Philippine thing. It's in the news and so on. We're talking to Jason Ditz from antiwar.com, one of the editors there, and I'm going, you know, help me out, Jason. Did this kind of surprise the administrations here? And now, because we got to keep in consideration, you know, NATO. Well, NATO's North Atlantic Treaty Organization of NATO, of Europe, of NATO, and Russia and NATO. And what the hell, whose side are we on? What consortium of, you know, the empire, the coalition of the willing that's going on in South China and Philippines? So when you got the president of the Philippines going, not only will, you know, I tell you, go to hell, man, I'll draw pictures and all that kind of stuff. So what's the U.S. response?
Well, so far the U.S. response has been a few rather curt diplomatic statements, to put it mildly. I think the other major response is that, well, Duterte is, you know, killing drug dealers and even drug users in the Philippines wasn't a big deal from the point he got elected until sort of the spats with the U.S. started showing up. Suddenly it's a major news story within the U.S. It's becoming something that they want Americans to be aware of so that they dislike this guy. That they're in the process of vilifying him right now, which isn't hard to do because he's not very savvy diplomatically, to say the least. I mean, today, in the Washington Post, he likens himself to Adolf Hitler. He says, just like Hitler killed millions of Jews, I'm going to kill millions of drug addicts. Which, that's, saying things like that certainly isn't going to make it hard for the U.S. to portray him as unhinged and sort of a danger to regional stability. But in practice, the United States' interest in the South China Sea is to have a presence there, and whether they do it with the Philippines or not really is another matter. Certainly they could find another country to be a proxy for, and I think the one that stands out as the most likely would be Vietnam, because Vietnam already fought a war with China over some of these islands and lost pretty drastically. And the Obama administration's been making overtures to sell boats and weapons to Vietnam to arm them up as these disputes continue.
Well, you know, Vietnam is playing what role now? What side are they siding with? They're more U.S. You know, everybody, it seems like China's just sitting back going, yeah, you just guys keep being stupid because it's all going to come down to economics, and they abandon the dollar, and all we got to do is start selling treasuries in lump, and all of a sudden you're down and screw you. And they're creating relationships behind the scenes with all these countries in all of, you know, Asia, and they need to stay with the U.S. because of why? What are we doing for these people? What is it, just bribing government officials? I mean, sooner or later, they have color revolutions left and right, and everybody's like, hell no, and the U.S. has no moral high ground or anything. I'm just wondering what the Chinese are offering. What are they doing? Just business relationships? I mean, you know, how are they countering us?
That's a big part of it, is business relationships. China can be a huge economic partner for, especially for countries within the South China Sea area, because they're right there. Hong Kong is right on the South China Sea, like you say. That's an enormous trading partner in a way that the United States, which is further away, simply can't be. And the U.S. is offering some level of naval defense that these countries wouldn't need if they're on good terms with China to begin with. China doesn't. I mean, China has some ambitions to have some offshore drilling in the South China Sea, certainly. They would like to have nominal claim over these islands just so they can do that, but they don't have this sort of imperial ambition where they're going to be attacking any other countries in the region to try to set up puppet states in Vietnam or in the Philippines or in Brunei or anything like that. So the American promises of defense and of having naval warships cruising through the South China Sea to prove that they can cruise through the South China Sea really don't amount to much.
Yeah, well, what is that all about anyway? The U.S., going up to the dragon and thumping them on the sternum and, counting coup or something, going in where their ships are the Chinese preventing transport of merchandise or something? Are they in the way? Are they, are we just, I don't understand why we even care. You know, I mean, they would shut down. That'd be like an act of war anyway. Why does China even want to be there to open, make sure they got sea lanes open? I mean, what is the issue at stake?
Well, the issue at stake really boils down to energy. It's about the oil and gas, which there have been only preliminary surveys, but there's believed to be a considerable amount of natural gas and oil under the South China Sea. And whoever has maritime control over that area gets to do the drilling. From the United States perspective, if a country like the Philippines has control of that area, so much the better, because they don't have any major oil companies in the Philippines that can do the drilling, so they're going to have to contract out for it, and they're probably going to pick an American driller. China, on the other hand, has PetroChina, they have Sinopec, there are a few choices within China, and they probably aren't going to pick a United States driller for these projects. So I think, I mean, China's
is
never...
Is it really that simple? There's some oil business, Halliburton, Bechtel, somebody kind of, man, we got State Department do some, Soros sends a email, saber rattling of whatever, pick me? I mean, that's it?
I really think it is that simple, because China has never suggested that they're going to threaten freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. It's a very important shipping route for a lot of countries.
So they're going to just threaten, hey, we get to compete for a bid to do the deep oil well of kind of because we can, and U.S. says, no, this aircraft carrier says you can. They go, oh, yeah, well, our island says we can. Now what?
Right. That's basically it. I mean,
seriously.
And the Pentagon's been sending warships through there supposedly to keep freedom of navigation in place, but China's never suggested anybody can't go through there. China never even made a big deal with the Pentagon with sending these ships through there, except for the fact that after they did it, then the Pentagon makes all these statements saying, boy, we showed them. And then China's like, well, don't be so aggressive, and we're willing to defend ourselves if the U.S. threatens us or anything. But realistically, there's no reason for this to escalate into a war except for the oil.
So that really, that's it? It's oil? I mean, you know, that's what I got to deal with? Yeah.
Well, when is it never not oil?
I know. Seriously, that's what I got to deal with? All right. It's oil. Damn it. Is that simple? Get some solar panels. Break away. Decentralization up to have this much influence in one sector. Energy is important, but let's get to the point we can do it ourselves. Then what? What happens? Oil prices, they're low. What are they going to do? Don't know.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
And now, live from the studios of Freedoms Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
This is, it's all just murka. Murka, murka, murka is about murka. And no. Well, it's getting to be where it's a lot of the other countries that are supposed to be murka, even the people that love Americans, you know, but what about the government? What about the military? What about the, you know, getting involved in their local politics? You're not allowed of the assassination of the coup or the color revolution of, you know, we rule you. After a while, man, they start built up resentment, and you get a leader, you know, or a representation, an icon, a celebrity, an elected official, somebody, and he goes, yeah, your mama, you son of a hoe. You know, I mean, it's just go, wow, man, that was, man, it, you know, it's hard for Trump to maintain the headlines. You got other leaders doing that, you know, then what are you going to do? Well, the U.S. goes over and they're going to be mean. I'm going to tell them to kiss ass. What are they going to do? Well, they got China said, hey. You know, we'd be your friend for 1,000 years. So we'll see what happens. What do you think we got to look forward to now, Jason Ditz from antiwar.com editor?
Well, we never have anything good to look forward to. I mean, that's for sure. As far as the South China Sea goes, though, I think it's going to be kind of a slow boil. The U.S. is going to try to resolve things with the Philippines, probably by vilifying Duterte to the point where he either gets forced out of office or suddenly has to make a big, you know, 180-degree turn and sort of have a find Jesus moment where he decides that being an ally of the United States is all that he's ever wanted.
You really think that's going to – I mean, they went through – we had John Perkins. You know, John Perkins, hoodwinked and confesses economic hitman, how this really works. They come in, they say, hey, man, you know, your brains are your signature on the contract. They act screw you, and if they can't assassinate them, then they bring in the military or colored revolution, and we're going to get ours, and how did all that oil get under, you know, our oil get underneath your land kind of thing. So I'm just, this is, you know, just the way business is being done, but sooner or later, there's always someone that says no. And they usually wind up assassinated. Are we willing to do a regime change in the Philippines?
I think we're still a long way from that. It's not that I would put anything past the United States with regards to the Philippines, given some of the horrific activities we've engaged in over the last century and a half in the Philippines. But I think for now, it's just sort of, you know, Duterte is kind of an old guy. He's kind of crazy, but he's pretty popular. I think they're just going to try to wait him out. And it seems like a lot of the officials in the Philippines government are still talking very pro-U.S. Philippines military officials are still saying they consider the U.S. their irreplaceable ally. The foreign ministry is always saying Duterte is being misquoted in the press when he says no more joint operations and things like that. So I think there's they're trying to work around him right now.
So we got a United States. You know what? Screw your president. We just go straight to the general of the guy that's on our CIA, FBI of, you know, diddling, you know, cats or throwing, you know, kittens on cactuses or something. We got something on them that, you know, we're going to, and we'll just bypass the president. Is that what they're doing?
I think that's what they're going to try to do, yes.
Well, he'll just kill him some generals.
And, I mean, that's possible too, but in practice, his main thing is drug dealers and drug users.
Why? So. Why is that such a what? Is it competing with his monopoly or something? What's up?
Well, he was the mayor of a very violent city, and he got elected on a promise of doing something about crime, and his answer of doing something about crime was just
kill all the criminals,
summary executions by the police and
the people.
Right. And we've had stories of, oh, this guy was a hitman, and he's like, well, I worked for him when he was a mayor sometimes, and I fed some people to crocodiles for him and things like that. So,
so he's one of those, he's the Punisher. I mean, he's a right. Marvel comic guy that, you know, give me a shiny badge and position, I'll go whip ass. I mean, I ain't going to do it as a vigilante masked something. I'm going to stand right out here and do it until somebody shoots me, which is he under threat? Does he do the Saddam Hussein Gaddafi thing and walk around in crowds downtown deal? Or is he, you know, kind of in a bunker or something?
He seems to be able to move around with relative impunity, and it's probably not surprising because the police love him. They love being able to get away with murder. So, you know, if they execute somebody and say, oh, they're a drug dealer, you know, not only are they not going to be prosecuted for killing that person, they're probably going to get a bounty from the president. The day after the election, the police made a big deal of hauling a few people out that they said were drug dealers and shooting them in the back of the head. And he went out to the city that happened in and gave them all medals.
No freaking way. The people they're supportive of this about damn time. And who do they blame for it being so corrupt before? I'm wondering the politic, you know, the general opinion of the people there. You got any idea?
I'm really not sure. There seems to be a pretty big divide between people who are, you know, sort of knee-jerk, conservative, anti-crime people who think, he might be going a little far, but this is a necessary evil. And then you have the people that just despise him. But, you know, he won the election, and by a fairly comfortable margin. So the public, I think, must be largely on his side on this. It's not like he made it a secret that he was going to go on a killing spree once he got elected. He was talking openly about filling up Manila Harbor with dead bodies if he was elected, and people still voted for him.
All right. Well, that may be why they voted for him.
It may be. It certainly doesn't seem to have hurt his chances all that much.
Well, what is the Philippines all of a sudden, because of China and the efforts going on there. And we have the rise of the economics in Vietnam. South Korea is certainly a power. Japan, Taiwan's right there. Hong Kong is right there, like a few hundred miles, you know, across the ocean. I mean, this is, the Philippines has always been a very strategic MacArthur, we'll come back, we'll see you later kind of place. And all of a sudden, it's starting to seem a little shaky. And they're during all of this, and China said, "Yeah, man, hell, we probably, yeah, we funded him getting elected." You know, you think we just spread money around the U.S. elections? Shoot. Well, I'm going, this is a long term kind of a cool play by China, and so I'm just wondering, the U.S. plan is what? Just threaten him, bribe him? He doesn't seem very. If they got drug dealers wanting to kill him, I'm just not seeing this working out well for the U.S. and how they're choosing to play this. How are they going to play it?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. I think right now it's threatening him, kind of vilifying him, a lot of behind the scenes diplomatic action, trying to sideline him as much as possible by being cozy with the military directly and trying to work around him. But in the end, it might just be a question of waiting him out. He's if he doesn't get elected next time around, or you know, if he either dies of old age or dies of an accidental gunshot wound, or whatever. I mean, it's hard to say how the U.S. is going to play this. For the time being, I think it's just, they don't really have to do anything drastic yet, but I think they're certainly starting to drop those plans somewhere.
I'd like to know what the plan, you know, it's, I don't know how many plans they need. We got India and Pakistan going at it in Kashmir. We have the South China Sea and the Chinese and Russian Navy saying, bite me. We are right in the middle of it. We got the Philippines going, yeah, USA can kind of, son of a whore, kind of, you know, suck it. We have Syria about ready to go into Third World War with Russia, if not already. We have Ukraine sitting there being ornery. NATO's flexing its muscles. You know, the European Union is about ready to go. The central bank in Europe and the U.S., the dollar is about ready to take a plummet. We got the BRICS and the money, they're going, we don't need the dollar anyway, we're over here. And then the energy monopoly is being challenged by maybe solar and gigafactories. Wow! What an exciting time! And we got Trump and Hillary.
You're coping with bad news.
There's my rant. All right. Hey, thanks for coming on, Jason. I appreciate the effort, man.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Peace, brother. Bye.
All right. Bye.